Episode 7, podcast number 7, of the insane ramblings of crazy old men, where Mike and Ray talk about the vagaries of broadband and the futility of HS2.
Brexit day today, Ray.
Hey, Brexit day. Mind you, I voted.
You voted Remain, yeah.
I did. I just gave up on it. I thought, well, if everyone's voted to Brexit, well, fine, let's Brexit. I mean, I still would have preferred to Remain. I think we're stronger as part of a bigger union, but I'm in the minority, so I'm willing to accept that.
Well, I just want it to be done.
Well, you're a Brexit voter right from the start.
Yeah, I'm not a fanatical. I just want it done so that we can move on to other stuff. Huawei?
Pardon?
Whey! Yeah, there's all that. There's our trip to Spain.
My mum was telling me about going to Spain. She's saying you're going to have to be careful after the year end. You need an international driving licence to drive in Spain.
Yeah, but that's quite simple, because I looked into that. And all we do is you go down the post office, you fill in a form, you pay, it's something like 10 quid, and they do it there and then. That's it.
Oh, really? What do you get for that, the international driving licence?
You get an international driving licence, which you need if you go to America and places like that anyway.
I'm not going to America.
Yeah, but I thought you were going to buy a hat in Texas.
Well, that was my dream before I had to pay the tax, man.
There's so much other stuff going on. I mean, like your continuing saga with broadband.
I changed over to PlusNet, and D-Day was supposed to be today, and I got up in the morning and I got a little email and it said, you're all ready to go on PlusNet, aren't you excited? I thought, yeah, I'm really excited because I've been with BT for so long and they've been ripping me off for so long and I hate BT. So anyway, I get my little router out and I unplug the BT one.
Is that the thing that's blinking red over there? It's a little red light flashing.
That's right. So
it's impressive.
So I plug it in and as you can see, not only is that not working, but my phone lines aren't working. So I rang PlusNet and they said, everything's fine. I said, it's not. My phone's not working. They said, well, what you need to do is unplug everything and plug it all back. And I thought, I've been through this before. They always ask you to do this. So anyway, I unplugged everything, plugged it back. Got back on the mobile phone because I was talking to them on the mobile phone and they cut me off. So I have to go through a whole rigmarole again, all these different numbers I have to press and whatever. And I finally get hold of them again. And they asked me a load of security questions. They asked me what my account number is and stuff. And I said, well, I haven't been allocated one yet, or I haven't got a password.
That's the problem. If you haven't got a password, it won't operate.
So they finally get me through and they say, you need to unplug it. I said, I already unplugged everything. And they said, okay, have you taken the front off the box? This little box down there. And I said, because the problem with this little box is behind this massive, great big desk. And it needs a screwdriver, and the screwdriver's in the shed, and I couldn't be asked. And I said, look, my phone's off, my broadband is off, but it was on just before you guys actually took it over. So I doubt very much it's anything to do with this, taking off the top of this box. And they said, you've got to do that. I said, look, I'm not going to do it. They said, there probably is a copper fault. And I thought, well, that's what BT told me. And they sent OpenReach around about eight times. This, seriously, they sent eight different OpenReach guys around. And none of them knew what the others were doing. So finally, in the end, I said, look, just send someone around. And they said, all right, well, you've got to pay the 60 quid a fee if it is anything to do with your internal system, your box. And I said, I don't care. Just send someone around. And they said, okay. And they said, we'll send someone around tomorrow morning between 8 and 1 o'clock. And I thought, well, that's good service. I said, who will you be sending around? And they said, OpenReach.
God, that's good news because you know them all. I think this thing with HS2 is fascinating. You know, the question is, what has gone from 32.7 billion... in 2010 to 106 billion in 2020 without actually going anywhere? And the answer, of course, is HS2. So the original price was just under 33 billion. Latest estimates are 106 billion. The route, as we know, is this funny Y-shaped thing with phase one going from Euston to Birmingham Curzon Street. Is that a new station, Curzon Street?
Birmingham's got a G, by the way. Now, I don't think it's a new station, but they're obviously going to totally revamp it and make it really big. This is my understanding. I don't really know.
But you're a Brummer. You should know.
Yeah, I don't know where Curzon Street is. I never.
Apparently, it's close to New Street and Moore Street and all those. They all seem to be close. But that's going to take half the budget. That's phase one. It'll be 14 trains an hour, and it's going to cut the journey time from London, that's Euston to Birmingham, from 81 minutes to 49. Then there's phase 2A, which goes from Birmingham up to Crewe.
Birmingham with a G.
Birmingham. And phase 2B, that goes from Birmingham to Manchester Airport and Wigan, but not into Manchester.
That's helpful.
And it goes to Leeds. And it also goes to, 8 miles south of York. It stops 8 miles south of York.
If I live in Manchester and I want to go to Wigan, do I have to come down to Euston and then catch the train?
No, apparently you catch the ordinary rail service. So this new thing is going to be 250 miles an hour, so really quick.
Mm.
So, for instance, Birmingham to Manchester is going to be cut from 88 minutes to 41 minutes, which is pretty fantastic. Birmingham to Leeds is going to go from 118, so 2 hours, call it, down to 57, so that's halving the time. It sounds good, but it's just strange. Apparently, there's no space in Liverpool to extend it. So what you have to do is go to Crewe,
yeah,
at 250 miles an hour,
yeah,
then get in the ordinary service from Crewe into Liverpool.
I live in Hemel Hempstead, so if I want to go to Birmingham on this thing, I have to catch a normal train down to Euston because I can't get it from Hemel Hempstead. And that will take me half an hour. Then I've got to hang around a bit. And then I catch it at 250 miles an hour to Birmingham. Yeah. I reckon by the time I get to Birmingham, it'd be the same as if I took the train from Hemel Hempstead.
Well, you know, I'll be honest. When they were first talking about HS2, I was pretty strongly opposed to it. And in the council elections, I actually voted for UKIP, because they were the only party at local level that were opposed to HS2. So I know the whole of Aylesbury Council went over to UKIP totally because of that. Nobody agreed with anything else they said, but they were the only party opposed to it. But now I'm sort of coming around. The estimates are that for every £1 spent of this £106 billion, they'll actually benefit of £1.40 for every pound spent, which are sort of...
I don't know how they work this stuff out. I know exactly what's going to happen. This 250-mile-an-hour train will be delayed occasionally. There'll be some problem. There'll be leaves on the line.
Well, at 14 trains an hour, that's going to have a hell of a knock-on effect. But the interesting thing is they had the Lady Mayor of Leeds on the TV the other day when they were still debating whether it was going to go ahead. And she said they've already had £30 million worth of investment from businesses in anticipation. So,
well, you've got places like Birmingham, Leeds probably, and all the real estate agents are all saying, oh, we're going to have this new HS2, property price is going to go up. That's what they're all banking on.
But it's businesses as well, offices and stuff. I mean, they looked at the alternative, which was basically upgrading the other lines. So they were talking about the West Coast and East Coast and Midland main lines, all three. And they estimated that for each one, it would require 2,000 weeknight shutdowns. The Birmingham to Leeds one was going to be 460 weekend closures. I mean, 460 weekends, that's almost 10 years, isn't it?
Well, I think the whole train system, I'm not even sure whether it actually makes sense in the 21st century, because if I was going up to Birmingham, I don't think I'd catch a train from Hemel Hempstead, a slow train, all the way down to Euston, and then wait for, okay, I might only have to wait 5-10 minutes or whatever, and then catch this bullet train up to Birmingham, then get in an Uber and go to where I'm going, because, and I have to get in an Uber to get to the station in Hemel Hempstead, I'd be better off getting in my car. It'd be cheaper, it'd be quicker, probably take me 1.5 hours in the car, And if I had two or three people in, it'd be far, far cheaper than going by train.
Yeah.
And I'd get exactly to where I want to go.
I think it's difficult, but because I think the benefits are hidden benefits. I'm coming round to it more now.
I don't like public transport. I'm not going on a train. I might go on it for a novelty value.
Yeah, you're a snob. I mean, I think it needs to go ahead, and I think the cost to a certain extent is irrelevant, because the other thing that nobody's looked at is the whole issue of rail. Is it worth doing? Can it operate effectively? So, for instance, if we think initially railways were invented, if that's the right word, for the transport of freight. Now, if you look at the latest figures, so this last year, 2019, the volume of rail freight has actually gone up by 0.3%. And if you look at the breakdown of how freight is conveyed in the UK, 9% is by train.
Yeah.
13% is by water. So I presume that's mainly sort of, you know, ships coming down from Newcastle to London, etc. 78% is by road. And that rail freight, they said, avoided 7.2 million lorry journeys and accounted for 17 billion metric tons. But don't you think the whole issue is rail travel is overpriced? It's so expensive.
Well, imagine if you're a graphic designer in Birmingham and you get yourself a job in London, somewhere...
Canary Wharf.
Yeah, somewhere like that. Okay, you might think, okay, I can get on this bullet train and I can move from New Street to Euston in, 40-something minutes, you were saying?
Yeah, 49 minutes. It's going to take them longer to get from Euston to Canary Wharf.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. So I don't know how long it takes to get to Canary Wharf. I imagine it must be a good half hour. So by the time you got there, you look at the cost of that of a graphic designer with, say, an average salary, I don't know what a graphic designer, maybe 30 grand or something like that. The cost, the yearly cost... of getting out to Canary Wharf from your home in Hall Green in Birmingham.
God, who wants to live in Hall Green?
You're never going to do it. I mean, days...
People don't live in Hall Green anyway.
The days of the train are over.
They exist.
And I'll tell you one other thing, and that is I read this short Sherlock Holmes story.
Can you slur that again?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, certainly I can. Show him, Mr. Bond. This short Sherlock Holmes story.
Sherlock Holmes story.
And Sherlock Holmes and Watson, they decided to go up to Birmingham for some reason, which I can't remember. It stuck in my mind, obviously, because I'm from Birmingham, if I haven't said that before. And it takes them 1.5 hours on the train.
Oh, my God. At the moment, from Euston, the time I've got here from the official report is it takes 81 minutes.
Yeah.
That's today. Yeah. It takes 81 minutes. From London, Euston to Birmingham.
And this story took place in the 19th century, right?
So it's no difference.
I think the government have to bite the bullet. The days of the train are over. It's antiquated technology. It's mid-19th century technology. Taking over from the canals... Now we've got the motor car. We're going to have smart cars. We're going to have lorries, smart lorries on the road. And these lorries are going to be able to be literally probably feet, just a couple of feet away from each other as they plough down the motorway at 100 miles an hour.
Excuse me, Mr. Knowles, I beg to differ. You see, I'm a big proponent of moving freight off the road.
Yeah.
Having driven round here on the M25 this morning and seen lorries across the first three of the four lanes... you know, it's horrendous. Secondly, I don't know what it's like here, but over in Buckinghamshire, potholes are the norm. There's one that I carefully avoided this morning. And this bloody thing, it's about 18 inches across. It's on the road from Stoke-on-Church through to Marlow, which doesn't sound important till you realise it's a cut through for traffic from the M40 to the M4.
Right.
So, peak times, it is horrendously busy. It's narrow, it's a two-way road. And the left-hand lane heading towards Marlow, just before you get to the Cressix turn-off, there's this pothole which is 18 inches across and about 5 or 6 inches deep.
So when it fills up with water, it's like a little pond.
You can't see it. So, but I know it's there, and presumably most of the people do. But if a cyclist comes off, God bless him, he's going to injure himself.
And so, what?
Yeah, well, I mean, we don't care about a cyclist. But if I hit it, having ignored it or not realising it's there, that's
you're going to damage your axle or something.
If 78% of the freight is going by road, that's horrendous.
Yeah, but the thing is, like we said the other day, if I have a biro factory here in Hemel Hempstead and you do something with biros and resell them and you're up in Birmingham, I can either...
Birmingham.
Yeah, Birmingham. I can either hire a truck or have my own trucks to take all those biros off to the station. Hang on, no, let me finish.
But you have to buy a truck, insure them, train the drivers.
Well, hang
you've
on.
You've got fuel costs, but you've got tax.
But I need a truck to get my biros to the station. Then they have to be offloaded off the truck and loaded onto the train. The train then goes off to, say, New Street somewhere. Yeah, again, the same thing has to happen. I have to get a truck, offload all those biros off the train, load them onto a truck, get them to your place. Now, the alternative to that is me having a lorry here, sticking a load of biros on and driving straight up to your factory, straight to the very factory door. And
that's exactly why it needs thinking through. In the old days of British Rail, when I was a young lad travelling on the train to school and stuff like this, And you had a freight depot. Every station, there was a parcels office. They used to have small trucks that went round collecting your parcels.
Yeah.
So what's to stop either the rail franchise or possibly an independent firm setting up locally, just local travel, so that a truck, and not these huge trucks you've got now, you know, we're talking about a van, a big transit van, comes along to your warehouse, my warehouse in Hemel, picks up three packs of these biros, takes them to the station, they go on a train which travels overnight, and it's...
I don't care when it travels.
Yeah, and the opposite happens at the other end when it gets to Hemel. A little local chap there picks it up from the station, brings to your factory for first thing in the morning.
Yeah, but how much is that going to cost me? You think of the cost of having some old lorry out the back here, loading it with biros, driving straight up the motorway and dropping it off. All I'm saying is that I can see...
But you won't have to pay the cost of purchasing the lorry, the insurance, the tax, the driver...
No, I still need a lorry.
All that sort of stuff.
I still need a lorry to get my stuff to the station.
No, and what I'm saying, this independent firm sets up, a small local company.
Yeah, and who pays them?
Well, they charge you, but it'll be less.
Well, I'm not convinced. I think that the only way that trains will be viable is if the cost of travel comes down significantly.
You've got two things. You've got damage to the road and the freight taking up space on the road, which is slowing down people's journeys.
That's right. But the thing is, the freight operators, or the guy who makes the biros, isn't going to swap over to that for purely altruistic reasons.
No, it's got to be a good service.
It's got to be a good service, and it's got to cost the same or less than what he's doing at the moment.
So you've got an economic and a service.
Yeah. If I want to go up to Birmingham in comfort, and I want to get from Hemel Hempstead to, say, Hall Green in Birmingham, I don't want to have to keep getting on and off trains and waiting around.
So who's the Luddite now?
No, but okay, would you come from Hemel down to Euston and then up to New Street and then catch something else to Hall Green? Or would you get in your motor car, which would cost you a lot less?
If you're going into central Birmingham, every time I've driven there, it's been a nightmare. You go up the M1, so you get held up near Luton, that bit that's like permanent roadworks and permanent traffic jam. You get onto the M6, you go around the top, fine, if it's clear. You stop at the services for a pee and a coffee, so you're bright and refreshed. Then you take that A38M down into Birmingham. And oh,
the Aston Expressway.
Then you come on the Aston Expressway, and that's when the fun starts.
You're not from Birmingham, so you don't know how it works. I did a U-turn on the Aston Expressway once.
You're joking.
I hope the constabulary aren't listening, but it was a long, long time ago.
I doubt if they are. I think no one's listening, apart from that chap in Scotland.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what the Aston Expressway is.
We've got our French listeners.
That wonderful road.
Yeah. I think we ought to say au revoir now.
Oui. Really. Is our French listener male or female?
Hopefully female.
Yes. Au revoir, ma chérie.
Mon chérie.